Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
First of my good evening. You're listening to Manx Radio and welcome to our latest election 2016 candidate interview. Tonight, I'm speaking to Ralph Peake, who is seeking re-election in the constituency of Douglas North. He is 54 years of age, married with three sons, and was first elected in a by-election in May last year after the elevation of Bill Henderson to the Legislative Council. Mr. Peake is a local business owner and, since he was elected, has been a political member of the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture and the Department of Health and Social Care. He's also on the Economic Policy Review Committee. And Ralph Peake, you say you want to use the experience that you've gained from your first year as an MHK to good effect, to the positive benefit of the Isle of Man. What experience are you referring to exactly and how will you use it?
Well, good evening, Beth, and thank you very much for inviting me along. I've certainly really enjoyed the first year, actually, and it is obviously trying to look at how to understand how things work in government as well as in the departments. Very pleased to, in my first year, bring a motion right through Tynwald successfully for DEFA on the environment, which is about climate change mitigation, so learned an awful lot in that process.
Now, I think it was fairly clear in your manifesto that you intended to be a national politician rather than just deal with constituency issues. In fact, you say, and I quote, running Douglas should be the job of locally elected representatives. How have you found that over the past year or so?
Yes, well, that's true. Running Douglas, but that's still, you know, meeting your constituents and listening to what their concerns are and trying to help them in that respect. That is definitely an important part of it. But of course, Douglas Borough Council are here to run that. But some people do need help and they need help to actually find out how and who they actually speak to. And obviously there's some people who do have concerns about some policies, some national policies, which of course that is a definite role of an MHK is to actually look at how we can improve policies. So constituent work is very important, but obviously there's that role is a national role.
But you still believe that Douglas Borough Council should be responsible for all Douglas matters and held accountable. And I suppose some people would wonder then, what is the point of being a constituency MHK? And because you must get involved in some of those constituency matters.
Well, you do, but you know they're your constituents, so you know they're your first priority. And obviously, as I say, it's about helping them understand the process in government, or even perhaps understand the process in Douglas Borough Council. There's lots of things you can actually perhaps share your experience and advice with. To help them navigate both those structures.
There's a point in your manifesto about not wanting charges for local residence permits. I mean, surely that should be a council matter?
Sorry, just repeat that again.
You say in your manifesto that you don't want any charges for local residence permits.
Right, yeah. Well, that's... It would be better if there was no charges for local residents. That's right. I think that's right about the parking issue. Yes, that's right. For the parking outside people's homes. That's right.
OK. Well, you also say in your manifesto that there needs to be a much better working relationship between Douglas Council and MHKs. So what have you been doing over the past year to encourage that?
Absolutely. We've put together a meeting of all Douglas MHKs, which I instigated. And that was really to try and test the ground, really, to see which Douglas matters we felt would be important, and we could then get a strong central voice on that. So, yeah, we'd hope to move that again after the elections to work together as Douglas MHKs.
And what sort of matters were brought up in that?
Well, it was about, at the time, 4 months ago, obviously the horse trams were a big issue at the time, and what other issues the other MHKs had. But that was the biggest thing at the time.
Well, historically, talking about relationships between MHKs, there has been a very close relationship between the MHKs in Douglas North. How is that now?
It's still good. We've actually, in our office, there was three people in the office. We've got Bill Henderson, which is ex-Douglas North MHK, now an MRC. And, of course, John Horton is still Douglas North MHK, and myself.
You believe the issue regarding Mr. Horton and his subsequent suspension should have been an internal personnel matter rather than being dealt with in Tynwald Court. But I'm also interested in the fact that you do say that there's a strong need for greater clarity, definition and transparency between the role of politician and the civil service. So I think in this matter, surely transparency was of the utmost importance. The public had a right to know what was going on with an elected representative. So why shouldn't it have been in Tynwald?
No, I absolutely agree in transparency, and people would want to know what's going on. My point about being a personnel matter should have really been dealt with before it got to Tynwald. By all means, you know, there was a public report done, there's a committee oversaw the matter, and that had to be dealt with in the public arena. Totally agree with that. And in no way do I condone in any way bullying behaviour by anybody. That wasn't the point. My point was it was a matter that could have been dealt with in a personnel way.
So you didn't just say that because you felt you had to and didn't want to lose your constituency ally?
Absolutely not, no. I'm completely clear on what I said and on what I believe was Tynwald, what would be Tynwald Matters and what isn't Tynwald Matters.
Now, you want the cost of running Capital and all island services shared equally, but you are very much against what you describe as stealth taxation, which you say has crept in over the past 5 years. There are going to be some people who say, surely if you live in Bride or somewhere like that, another rural area, for example, you're not getting the same level of service as you do in Douglas, so why should they pay for it?
Well, we are all in this together, really. The Isle of Man is a, you know, a small area. We have services that we all want to use. Douglas is the capital of the island, and there are some facilities in there which everybody in the Isle of Man can use. So I think trying to work together out of this would be a much stronger way of doing it, and then we can get more efficiencies in that. I think at the moment it is a bit skewed for people who actually live in Douglas.
Do you think there is a general consensus, though, across the island that that should be the case?
I think there's a realisation that, you know, we need to work together to actually get out of this, and the most economical, the most efficient ways of doing that is to centralise things and perhaps reduce the individual overheads there are around the island. Certainly if we can try and make things more efficient and effective, that's got to be the way forward, working together.
Now, just speaking about your own personal working, in your manifesto for last year's by-election, you made a list of promises. You said you'd be judged on your actions. I think it's fair to say there's nothing really concrete in there. They were more vows about how you'd think or act. And I think it would be difficult to say that you had quit or given up or hadn't worked in an open and honest manner.
Thank you.
How careful, though, are you being in this campaign about not making promises you can't keep?
No, I think it's about your values, really. And if you can have strong values and people can see and understand those, then they're going to have the confidence in your decision-making process. I really strongly believe, you know, to let people know how you make those decisions, really, and what you base them on. And values are very important. And if those values are understood by people who want to vote for you, then that's going to give them the confidence that you're the right person to be there at the time and make the right decision at the right time.
Okay, well, you say then, if you are re-elected, you're going to provide a clear vision of where the island wants to be. Where is that?
Absolutely, yeah. It's very, very important that we do have a clear vision, because that's how we're going to galvanise people to work together.
So what is your vision?
Well, it's getting the most prospective, prosperous island we can actually have. And what do we actually do? What are we actually doing good now? If we can identify what we're doing good now, we want to hang on to those. Then we want to look at how we can actually grow the economy. Easy thing to say, harder to do. But who actually grows the economy? Entrepreneurs, attracting entrepreneurs here to the Isle of Man, also encouraging entrepreneurs who are already here in the Isle of Man to actually start their own businesses. If we can get entrepreneurs employing one other person, that's going to be a great growth prospect. You only have to look at the likes of Microgaven, for instance, great company here in the Isle of Man. Well, they started in the Isle of Man not that long ago, four people in Athol Street. That's the sort of thing, trying to get great ideas, great entrepreneurs with clear vision, get them started here, and then we can then enjoy that growth alongside them, rather than, I think, trying to attract large companies that are already established elsewhere. That's a big logistical headache to move a large company here. Much better off to actually get people with creative ideas here in the first place.
Well, where are those people? Are there enough of them?
Well, we have to, you know, we've got people going through the education system. We've got people going away to university. Great ideas, intelligent people. Let's try and get that encouraging to them to come back to the Isle of Man. Let's try and help those people come back here, make it easy for them.
How are you going to make it easy for them?
Well, we can actually help them come back here by having assistance. We can then get them to come back here, work, and if they can do that within a period that can bring that knowledge back to the Isle of Man, we can get those ideas, that creative idea. We can start creating hubs, creative hubs here, and then we can then benefit from that as their business grows and their ideas are most beneficial. That's about sort of teamwork, that's about working together.
And is there the money, though? I mean, a lot of this must come down to financial incentives. Is there the money to do this sort of thing?
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be money, does it? It's about ideas. It's about being creative, seeing the right opportunity, pulling away from perhaps old, outdated methods of working together and embracing new methods of working together. There's opportunities all around. Brexit, big opportunity, isn't there? Might be a lot of fear there for some people, but you know, it's politicians' responsibility to allay those fears, get people to actually see the opportunities and work towards those opportunities and fulfill them. And I think people, entrepreneurs, people with business experience are well placed to actually do that, to see those opportunities and to realise them into reality.
I mean, Brexit is one of the key areas the Isle of Man is going to have to negotiate. How do you see it working then for us?
I don't think the Isle of Man's going to negotiate that. I think we're actually going to... it's the UK that's going to negotiate the exit.
But you do say that the island needs to be open-minded and agile to capitalise on the opportunities.
Oh, absolutely. But that's taking our future in our own hands, isn't it? And actually going out there.
Have we got the power to do that?
Well, we can... We're an island, we're a nation, we've got our own government. It's doing things that will attract people here, putting down a marker, seeing what actually works well here and attracting people who want to be in the island. So we've said time and time again, we want to attract people to actually live on the Isle of Man. We want to attract people here who can contribute, want to live here, want to contribute, and we can all benefit from that.
It takes us on to the so-called multiplier effect,
yes.
Or the local economic return, the buy local schemes, which you say have been tried without the understanding or published benefits. And I'm sure most people would understand that if you buy things from local producers, it is better for the local economy. But if it's not better for people's personal finances, then I don't think it matters how many figures you throw at them. They're not going to do it. How do you change that mindset?
Yeah, well, you've hit the nail on the head there. We've got to make it as easy as possible, haven't we? We've got to make it attractive. It is clearly understood. I think people would realise and agree with you that they can see the benefit of money going around the economy. So if they buy something from a local company, they can see that. But if we make it hard for them, maybe if the customer service isn't good enough, if the price is too high, there are barriers for people to, if you like, prevent them carrying out investment in the local community. So we have to work hard and actually remove those barriers.
How?
Well, we've got to work hard and remove those barriers.
But work hard doing what?
By looking at more efficient and better processes, understanding how your business works, identifying costs that you can remove waste, new ideas. These are all things which businesses have to develop as they go through their business life. You sometimes have to change the direction your business goes in. You have to change a process. You have to be aware. Business people are used to morphing into a slightly different direction, slightly different business to stay in business. That's what you have to do. So that's something which we can then bring into government, into departments. It's looking at our costs. It's looking at how to... The Japanese have a word for this called Kaizen, and it's about identifying improvement. And I was heartened to see in the Chief Constable's report recently, at the back of his report, they list their principles for his area. And it is about identifying how they can make improvements. And he keeps identifying improvements. That is how we're going to make things more efficient, and that's ultimately how you make things more effective. And then it's then about living within our means.
But then when it comes to individual businesses, I mean, how can you set up a set of rules, right? This is what you need to do. I mean, they're all out there. They're all disparate. And it's hard to bring everybody into the same mindset. You have a great vision for collaboration, but how realistic is that?
Well, it's not about rules, I don't think. You know, it's about helping people see the benefit. So it's getting people to want to do it. We've worked very hard on the climate change claim strategy by actually getting people to want to put energy efficient solutions in the home. It's not about regulations and forcing people to do it. It's about creating the framework so people can see clear benefit for themselves so they can then want to do it. So you get people moving towards the solution rather than trying to regulate or force them into it. I don't know about you, but being forced into something doesn't often feel good. And do you actually get a really willing person when you force people to do it? I don't think so. I think you're much better off understanding their needs and getting people to want to walk towards a better solution.
In your manifesto, Ralph Peake, you want to see government expenditure reduced by what you call careful scrutiny, policy change. What areas have you identified where this approach would be applicable?
Yeah, that was my policy for last year when I successfully got in the by-election. My manifesto for this year will be out, but I agree with you, it won't be too different from that. It is waste. It's a number of years of the departmental system, of the way budgets are set. You know, it starts the year with that money, and that then is a mindset then of, well, this is the money we've got and looking to spend it. You know, both the financial people in departments I've spoken to, and they're really both wanting, that's in DEFRA and health, are both wanting to look to change that. And that's what we have to do. If the money we've got is reducing, we can't just keep setting a budget at the start of the year. We need to understand what the costs are of the services we deliver and how we can make that a figure that we can then honestly believe that is the cost, the true cost of things, and then we can then know how much things cost to deliver.
Do you think you can really run the Isle of Man like a business? I mean, it's natural, obviously, given your background, that you see it in that business mindset. But isn't it also about the people?
It is absolutely about the people, and it's about the service you deliver. I mean, one thing, you know, modern businesses actually do is put the customer first. Now, I don't see the difference between putting the customer first in a departmental or service-led organisation. Surely that's what we've really worked on at health in this last year, is actually putting the customer first. We've changed the name, if you like, from what we call, I know you're a patient when you go to the hospital, but if you actually think of that patient as a customer, then you can actually then start seeing it differently and wanting to put the customer first and put their needs first. And that really is important. Now, that's mindset. You know, that if we can get people to think along those lines, that's modern business practice. And what's wrong with that? I think that works terribly well in government as well as business.
When it comes to financial matters, you're critical of what you describe as knee-jerk reactions, but then you're also not a fan of the external reports looking at matters in detail. So what is the right approach then, in your opinion?
I think external reports, I think there's been an excellent report done by Lord Lisfane. I think the report he's done in 7 weeks, he was able to identify some really key things. So I think it's always, in some places, it's very good to get some expert advice, whether that's external or whether that's internal, getting some expert advice. But I think that Lord Lisfane report has identified a number of things which may have been thought about in the past here, but I think he's really put it quite clear English what to actually follow there. And I think his idea on scrutiny of MHKs, having a number of MHKs scrutinising the others, having reduced numbers in departments, is all great, great work.
Some people would say those recommendations don't actually go far enough. Are you just happy maybe to keep the status quo? Don't want to rock the boat too much?
Do you mean the Lord Lisfane report? I think it's a very good start. I tell you what, if we can actually agree all of that in autumn, that would be a great direction for the Isle of Man to follow. I certainly would support each of his recommendations.
Just briefly, you're very clear that you don't think older people should be footing the bill for the position we find ourselves in currently, economically. You want free travel for over 65s, free TV licences for those over 75. You wanted to keep the pension supplement, which is just now being phased out over 20 years, which you've said is an achievement as far as that's concerned. And I'm sure no one would deny that pensioners who are struggling need to be supported as much as possible. But there are people over here, older people, who are wealthy and more than capable of affording to pay for these things. So why shouldn't they?
I think there's one good thing that we've got recently is making the state pension sustainable. I think that's a great thing. Luckily, there is a fund there. And what we've done recently is actually protect that fund. So that will be good going forward. I think the old shouldn't pay for it. That's something which I did say. And yes, why not? We want to actually get the services, people who use the services, more paying for them. And it's, again, it's understanding costs, it's understanding how we can then get those services covered.
But according to the World Economic Forum, pensioners generally have seen significantly higher disposable income growth than young people in nearly every country. So we've got house prices forcing young people out of the housing market, they've got student debt, they're struggling to find stable, well-paid jobs. many pensioners on the opposite side own their own home. They've got triple lock guarantee on their pensions. I just wonder how sure you can be that you're targeting the right area here, or is it just because typically it's the older people who go out and vote?
No, Beth, I think you've actually identified there exactly why we did make it sustainable, and that's why we did remove that triple lock, which made it unsustainable. Those are the things which we have identified made the state pension sustainable moving forward. I think it's 2035 before it needs really to be looked at again, before the figures move away from being sustainable. So that's it. I think that's a great thing to do.
But what about the young people who are struggling?
Well, the young people are struggling. We want to be working with them to get in education, to get them to want to actually educate, to get more academic achievements. People who actually don't want to stay and do academic, want to help them into apprenticeship schemes. It's a great alternative to do as an apprenticeship. I myself was an apprentice mechanic, which I really enjoyed. And it's not for everybody, is it, academics? So we would definitely want to support them. But the great thing to do is to get people in to that lifelong learning. It's not about when school finishes. We all want to carry on learning. And if we can grow as individuals and want to actually do the best we can, work together, respect people, respect the islands, respect our environment, we'll have a much, much better place to live in.
You have started your door-to-door campaigning. What are the people on the streets telling you that they want and need from Douglas North MHK over the next 5 years?
Yep, I've been out there now, and I've certainly enjoyed it. I've had some great feedback from people on the door. The biggest number one issue is the fact that we didn't actually really deal with the public sector pension. That's the fear, and that's on both sides. I've had people just last night give me very strong feedback on that, and it's a big issue. It's going to affect a number of people, but I think what we can do is bring some certainty to this. At the moment, there is uncertainty, and that's no good for anybody. What we must do, our responsibility, as soon as Tynwald is formed, is to address that seriously and get some clear, definitive, sustainable solutions that people can really understand and know what they can then make plans for their future. It's so important to do that.
You say you deal with it by including the legacy and negotiating a sustainable solution, if you said, based on fact. What does that actually mean?
Well, it actually means that you've got to have everything on the table. You cannot try and work anything out if you take half the things off the table. So to show people respect, we must actually put everything on the table and work on a sustainable solution for the Isle of Man.
In May last year, you promised new ideas, you promised a fresh mind. So if you are re-elected, what are you actually going to deliver for the constituents of Douglas North, Ralph Peake?
Well, the constituents of Douglas North, I mean, it's continuing to work with them, to listen to them, to help them in any small areas that they need advice on, and any of the larger things that come along. It is about making sure we have services and trying to put Douglas first. It is about, I believe, will be the best thing is working with other Douglas MHKs to get the strong voice for Douglas.
And what is going to be the main priority of the new administration?
Public sector pensions.
And what are you going to do to drive that forward if you are re-elected?
To get everything on the table and to get a solution that the Isle of Man can afford, and that will remove the fear for everybody and give people a clear knowledge of what they're going to get.
And in terms of working together, I mean, I've mentioned this before, yep. You've got a very optimistic view yep. of collaboration. Politics doesn't always work like that, and a lot of it is about the arguing and the thrashing things out. How do you bring everybody together to sing from the same hymn sheet?
Well, you've got to try and bring everyone together and then try again. But I agree, you can't actually just hang around and wait for everybody. You have to have a deadline and you have to make a decision. And I think that's what needs to improve. This next administration, whoever it is, the Chief Minister has got to have strong leadership, command the respect of a team that he puts together, he or she puts together, and work on addressing the issues and making sure that we actually get things done. People want things to be done now. They really do. Clear vision, strong leadership, working together.
Ralph Peake, Douglas North MHK, thank you. Tomorrow at the same time, you can hear the MHK standing in the new combined constituency of Glenfarne and Peel, Geoffrey Boot being interviewed. Until then, goodbye.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys General Election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.